What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mr. Movie. I'm your host, as always, Josh Bergman, and today is a very special episode because I have a brand new guest who has never been on the show before. He is an old friend from school, he is always down for an adventure, and he will kill on the dance floor because he's that great of a dancer and is my guy, Cameron Kushner. Cam, how are you?
I'm a little offended that I'm an old friend. 25 is not old anymore, Josh.
No. Like, we've known each other for 4 or 5 years at this point. So that's what I mean by
old. Has it really been that? Wow, it really has been that long, hasn't it?
Yes, I've personally met you in fall of 2017. So I guess 4 years.
Do we want to recount that memory for your fans?
Sure. So, okay, as a background, Cam Kushner here is technically my G-Big in my fraternity at school. And so in the beginning of my sophomore year, your senior year, you were abroad when I joined the fraternity, ZBT. And so I've only heard of you in rumors. I'll admit, not the best rumors.
I disagree.
But then you... But you're living in this apartment complex, the Ave. Love the Ave. Great apartment. Everyone lives there from school. But I was seeing one of my friends, and I was coming down. I was leaving through the front door, and then you're coming in through the front door. And we recognize each other because you've probably stalked me all the time on Facebook. And then we hugged it out, and we're like, oh my God, it's you. So that's how Cam and I met.
It was beautiful. Your first words were like, I know you.
And I still know you to this day. But Cam, I am so excited to have you on because today we're going to be talking about the new Disney animated film, Raya and the Last Dragon, as well as ranking our top 10 Disney animated films. But before we get into any of that, I just have to ask, Cam Kushner, who are you? Who are you as a person? Who are you in just the movie-loving world? Or what movie makes Cameron Kushner go, oh yeah?
I guess if I had to sum it up, my love for movies is tangential. I associate myself with people who love movies, make movies, and things like that, though I have none such talents whatsoever. But I like to be supportive, and I appreciate what people do and what people think about things. So I'm here for the, like you said, I'm an adventure guy. I'm here for the ride.
I'm so excited.
Movies that make me say, oh yeah. Well, there's like different oh yeahs. Do you want the specific oh yeah, like the oh yeah, like...
It could be just like, what type of film do you love? Where if it's on or playing in a theater, you just go like, I have to see that, or I love this type of film from my childhood.
Any movie that I see that Emma Stone is going to be in is a movie that's like, oh yeah, let's fucking go.
That is a great move, because Emma Stone, anything she does, good or bad, is lovable.
Also applies to Amanda Seyfried. Like,
interesting.
One of my guilty pleasure movies is Jennifer's Body.
I saw that once, and it was a very mixed experience, but that's awesome. And Cam, I've also brought you onto this episode today because from what I've experienced through our conversations or when I make a random reference, and it's a Disney reference, you always understand what I'm talking about because it seems like you just know a lot about Disney. You've had great experience with Disney, whether it is live action or animation, from your childhood even to this day. So what's your state of mind in the world of Disney?
In the world of Disney? So I very recently learned about the whole, not feud, but I guess, not even dispute, the dual existence of Disney animated movies that are Disney animation and Disney animated movies that are Pixar.
Because of this episode, because of the qualifications I had to make.
No, it was because my brother actually runs a movie podcast too, called Wasting All This Time with Wade Kushner, if anyone's interested in going through nostalgia.
What a great plug.
Hey, you had ZBT and the Av. I had to throw something on there. But yeah, he was doing an episode about Chicken Little, and they were kind of going through about the production process of the movie and how it was going into Disney animation, and I guess what the timing, it was when they were trying to acquire Pixar. They had Pixar, but didn't like fully integrate it or something like that. So they were trying to like hone in on Disney animation studio skills. But I actually saw it on cable the other day, and I forgot how bad the animation was.
Not to go into full spoilers for a list, but I'm really hoping Chicken Little is not in your top 10.
I'm pretty sure it's not.
As a movie fan and a fan of Pixar and Disney itself, there's always confusion of what movie belongs to which studios because there is a difference between Pixar and the people who run it and Disney Animated Studios, and I'm somewhat aware of the conflict between them. I'm pretty sure one of the head creators of Pixar went over to Disney in the 2010s and create a resurgence in the quality that we're probably going to discuss later. But beyond all that, let's get right into the movie, because Disney Animated Studios, not Pixar, has come out with their latest film, Raya and the Last Dragon. It is directed by Don Hall, who previously directed Winnie the Pooh, Big Hero 6, and co-directed Moana, as well as Carlos Lopez Estrada. And pretty much, this film stars Raya, played by Kelly Marie Tran, and it takes place in an alternate world in which in this culture or kingdom, it's a lot of exposition, so they're like, something bad happened, and this one kingdom was divided into five kingdoms because of this evil entity, and all of these dragons kind of went away. And in exchange, there's this one thing that keeps the world together. And when mishaps ensue, causing kind of this thing to break, and then the world, this evil entity comes back, Raya has to pretty much go out and try to find the last dragon, played by Awkwafina, who is Sisu, the last dragon, and try to really reunite the world and get rid of this evil entity. As I was kind of hinting at, there's a lot of exposition in this film, but on the way with Raya's character, you then run into a bunch of colorful characters, including a young kid who owns a restaurant boat, a baby with a bunch of monkeys, and just a lonely older man. And one thing to know about this film is that it does take place in Asian culture, but it doesn't really focus on it, which is just one element that I was really impressed and fascinated with this film. But it's Disney. It's an original story, and this was also a minor casualty of the COVID-19 pandemic. It was originally supposed to come out Thanksgiving weekend, but then it was delayed to March 5th this weekend, and while it is in theaters, it is also on Disney Plus for a $30 fee charge, in which you can watch it for as long as it's on Disney Plus. And with that out of the way, Cam, what'd you think of Raya and the Last Dragon?
Well, first off, I gotta start with your comment about minor COVID casualty. I think Monty Python would call it a COVID flesh wound.
Well, it is kind of a flesh wound, because it could be a movie like Trolls World Tour, King of Staten Island, which just got sent straight to video on demand.
Oh, yeah, no, that was funny.
This is still seeing the light of day in theaters. This is still in theaters.
Yeah, no, I thought that was pretty cool. Like, given, I think $30 is a lot to pay for access to one movie. What? How early do you think, like, when do you think they'll do regular access on Disney Plus?
So they actually have announced that the regular access, if you want it on Disney Plus without the $30 fee charge, is in June, the regular 3 months post the release. So pretty much the same time it'll be on Blu-ray or rental on demand for a charge. Then it'll be for free in a way if you have Disney Plus.
Yeah, no, I think $30 is wild for that.
But anyway, before we get into that, back to the
that's
movie, Cam.
That's a whole other subject.
That's a question for later on. But to start off, Cam, what did you think? What did you think going into the movie? Did you know that much about it? And overall, what did you think of Raya and the Last Dragon?
So the only thing I knew about it going into it was, what's her name? The main actress. I'm blanking on the
Kelly
first
Marie
name.
Tran.
Kelly Marie Tran. She was on The Daily Show the other night. They were talking about how this is going to be the first Disney movie specifically with a Southeast Asian princess, so like Vietnam, Cambodia, Indochina Peninsula.
Is she a princess, though?
She's the daughter of a king figure. They actually discussed that on The Daily Show. Okay. Trevor Noah questioned it, and she's like, yeah, she's a princess.
All right. Then we have a brand new Disney princess. I don't deny it, though. I definitely put her in that category with all the famous princesses.
You'll have to check, like, the Disney Constitution and make sure it checks out with their rules of royalty, but I'm team making her a princess. I'm for it. But I guess my initial impression, just, like, with how the character looks, how they set up the exhibition for the story, I'm just like, in my mind, long ago, I'm messing up on it. It was like the Avatar intro was in my mind the whole time.
Then the Water Nation, it's Fire Nation attacked.
So like that idea of like a divided world, yes, but also specifically the way that they had her dress in the like opening exposition, like showing the context of the Kingdom of Heart and things like that. She looked like a knockoff Katara.
But beyond just the way it looks. So yeah, no, but it's true though that it does kind of derive at least from some things we've seen before. And as well, it's a Disney movie. At least the opening of this film. If you've seen a Disney movie, you know a lot of the beats that are going to happen in this film.
No, that comes through like, it's kind of the general thing for any story. You have the exposition, rising action. I could go through all the stuff they taught us in high school English about writing stories. I don't want to give away too much of the movie, but I really love...
No spoilers.
No spoilers. I'll do my best not to spoil. It might happen. Josh, you can edit it out if something happens and we can make it flow, but... No, I loved how fast the rising action came. I loved how fast it just got right into the conflict of the story. I couldn't tell you the time. What was it? Within 10 minutes, you're totally caught up on why everything's the way it is, and things just keep getting more exciting from there as new characters are added to the, what do you call it, a band? The band of adventurers?
Yeah, they're a band of brothers, you know? They're on a task, and they just, each destination, they get a new person to come onto their team. But yeah, the opening, just the opening scenes itself of beyond that wordy exposition of what happened prior to that, what sets up the conflict with Raya and the world around her, I thought one, was done very quickly, which I really enjoyed, and two, it set up a great conflict between her and Namari, played by Gemma Chan.
Oh, yeah.
Who, just that rivalry, I loved, because it makes sense, and it's pretty cool how they're very much fit for each other.
And it was very much like a deep rivalry, too, like just from the get-go. Like, yes, it was fast how it happened, but you can understand where the scars come from, yeah. Also, just the whole general idea of trust and peacemaking that came across the whole movie resonated with me a lot, because that's what I've spent thousands of dollars studying and hoping to build a career in.
Cam, what do you mean by that? What are you studying right now?
So I'm currently a law student, and Josh has given me an outlet to pretend like I don't have a huge appellate brief due in about a week.
You know what? You all need a distraction. You always need a distraction from studying, so I'm glad I got you to watch a Disney movie as well as be on this podcast for however long we're recording for. But yes, one thing I've always loved in at least some recent Disney films is that their messages are really strong or surprising.
Right.
Mostly different or unique from the standard message we see in certain movies, when the main message in this movie is trust, that we should learn to trust people. And I am positive and mixed with how that message plays into the movie, going into some of my negatives, because one, just the message of trust, great, great lesson. You should trust people even if you have different beliefs. But second, so Raya as a character, one, just as a character, she is able to do a lot. She is a great protagonist, not even just a female protagonist. She's just cool in general. But I don't think she has a lot of, or really any strong flaw as just a character. Like, I felt like she was just doing stuff for the plot. So it seemed like by the end, her flaw was that she doesn't trust people, and she should learn to trust people that she learned from Sisu, played by Awkwafina. But the people she doesn't trust in the film or shouldn't trust, I agree that she should not trust, because those people are not trustworthy, and they could potentially or have tried to kill a friend of theirs or something like that. Like, I thought the message was a bit lost in the shuffle and didn't make Raya as vulnerable as a character. What'd you think of that?
It's hard for me to think of Raya as vulnerable at any point because she's so tough. Like, there's one scene I remember specifically when they were going to one of the special designations and she was explaining her background of not trusting. And that's really where you kind of see her open up in terms of the theme of trust and going over that. But I don't think it was lost in the shuffle. I think there was a lot of that constant influence from Sisu to just like keep pushing to trust these people that they were encountering because they knew that they could be helpful. You need them, they'd get something. What are you smiling about?
But they weren't, because they tried to harm Raya the entire time.
But there's the perseverance with it too. It's this idea that you have to keep trying, which I think kind of matches up with the theme that you get from other Disney movies, like Moana, for example. She has to keep trying to get what she's... Imagine if she just gave up on Maui right from the get-go.
But in Moana, I felt like she kind of had a flaw of trying to... It's been a while since I've seen the movie.
Same.
But I felt like she had a flaw of... She wants something that her family doesn't want, and she doesn't love, like, her family and culture. She wants to get away with it, and she learns to love her culture. When in this, Raya just felt very plot-driven with a weird, you should trust people. Us that she should trust. You shouldn't trust them, really. But anyway, beyond that.
Well, like, maybe it's the nature of the emergency of the situation. Whereas in, like, Moana, I guess there was the emergency with, like, the coconut famine and everything like that. I guess you just have this entity roaming around stoning people.
Really a villainless. Like, there's no face. It's just, as we mentioned, an entity. The real villain in the movie is, I would say, Namari, in a way. Character villain, if anything.
I'd say she's an antagonist, but I wouldn't call her a villain.
Yes, that's a better term. Antagonist in the film. Which, once again, I do love that dynamic. But to moving on,
yeah.
Awkwafina...
She's hot, too.
I also, for audiences, I'm pretty sure the characters are in their 20s. So we can say this.
As long as we're not talking about the flashbacks.
But to move on, Awkwafina as Sisu the dragon. I was a bit nervous about this because Awkwafina, I think she's funny as a comedian. Sometimes she can get annoying in some sense, and I thought this mainly looks at the Robin Williams genie character or The Rock as Maui in Moana, in which you have the sidekick comedic relief character who kind of even breaks the reality of the film. One of my favorite jokes was that she was talking about a group project and one person doesn't really do all the work, but they get the same amount of credit. Like, I thought that was hilarious, but I was a bit nervous. Is this gonna go like that? I personally did not find her annoying. I really liked Awkwafina as Sisu. I thought she had a great balance of comedic relief but necessity to the plot.
I didn't make that genie connection, but now that you're saying that, I'm like I made the Maui connection.
100%.
No, I completely agree. 100%. I completely agree. Like, I'd say even more so than the Maui connection on that. Like, I wish I had noticed that when I was watching it.
But even with the connection with the genie and Maui, those characters came in like 30 minutes into their film. Mm-hmm. One thing I love that you were kind of hinting at of how quickly this movie goes, you have the opening disaster scene, and then immediately Raya finds Sisu. I loved that. You don't need to waste time on trial and fail for trying to find Sisu. So I really like that it really jumped just to the chase, and Sisu's in the film for a majority of it.
Yeah, no, I think, well, you need Sisu in there. Otherwise, you're not going to have that influence telling Raya to trust people, and she's just going to be lonely the whole time some more.
That is true.
What was the name of her loyal companion?
Tuk-Tuk.
Tuk-Tuk,
I love Tuk-Tuk because, one, so Tuk-Tuk, as you could probably guess, is the Disney animal sidekick if you have seen a Disney movie.
It's the merchandising plan.
It is the merchandising plan. But one thing to kind of go into some issues I have with some, at least modern Disney films, is how Disney-fied it is, how certain elements feel like they're only there for either straight comedy relief with no relation to the plot or for merchandise. One thing I like about Tuk-Tuk, who is voiced by Alan Tudyk, a iconic Disney voiceover actor who's been in almost every film the last decade of theirs, Tuk-Tuk is necessary for the plot because Raya needs to go places and he is the transportation mode. So that's why I love Tuk-Tuk as the animal sidekick.
Okay, it's not Disney, but if you had to choose between an animal sidekick, would you rather have Tuk-Tuk or Appa?
Which one's Appa?
Appa from Last Airbender?
I never...
Sky Bison?
I never watched...
You never watched Last Airbender?
No, I don't want to have this conversation in this episode.
We don't have to talk about it. I'm just judging you.
Appa flies, though, so I do like I do like that. But yeah, so one thing I was actually nervous about was how Disney-fied or sometimes...
Wait, no, I didn't even get to talk about Awkwafina yet.
Oh, sorry. You talk about Awkwafina.
I love Awkwafina as a supporting actress. I'm a big Crazy Rich Asian stan, so seeing her kind of reprising that same role of, like, the eccentric yet positive friend...
It works.
I don't know, I like it.
But did you find her any bit annoying?
I was worried about that same thing, like, from the beginning. Like, just kind of, like, the cuts from their reality, like you mentioned, like, the group project thing, or any other reference she made to stuff that's like, how would they get that? That doesn't make sense here.
But it wasn't as bad as something as... not as irrelevant as something in Aladdin or Moana, at least for me.
We'll talk about Aladdin later, but I loved how irrelevant it was, but I was worried when she started saying things when Sisu was introduced, how it was going to connect. Like, I thought I was worried about it being just comedy for the sake of comedy. But once you really get that honing in the trust message coming in there, you see how it reflects on Awkwafina's character's attitude and how Sisu does things. It all fits together when you watch it, trust me.
Yes. But going back to just some elements where I was a bit nervous about, especially going back to a previous thing I was talking about, of how certain elements feel Disney-fied, including elements of the film or characters that are just meant for either merchandise or unnecessary comedy relief. One character that I was nervous about that did not turn into this was Bone the Boat Captain, played by young actor Isaac Wang. I really enjoyed that character because kids in films, animated films, are very risky, because I think they could be annoying.
What else was he in? Because his voice sounded super familiar.
He was the cool kid in Good Boys, if you remember that.
Yes!
Yep.
Yes! Oh my gosh.
So him, I was pleasantly surprised about that he did not annoy me in any sense. I cannot say the same for the baby with the monkeys. That felt like it was trying a bit too hard, and I thought, merchandise.
I think they're just waiting for a Boss Babies crossover.
Oh, don't even... try me with that. That is a very dangerous territory. What did you think, though, about the babies, monkeys? They're not, like, annoying, but I just thought this is...
No, they were annoying. That is totally fair to say. They were very annoying. I think they dragged it out for too long. They could have picked a better character to bring on from that region.
And it was mainly just to have a more... not necessarily kid-friendly, but just more comedy in the film when I don't think that we needed that.
Yeah, no, you don't need the baby and the monkeys after... the scene that they're the most useful for.
And one other thing before we kind of move on is there's certain things that happen in the third act of the film where I thought Disney coming again with the ballsy choices made. And I know it's a Disney film and it should have a happy ending, but I wish they stuck with the decision that they made. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I've got to be honest. I think you set this question up to put me in a corner.
Why is that?
Because I made the mistake of watching this movie late at night after consuming substances, and I was passing out toward the end.
Well, anyway, So there was a decision made with one of the characters where they kind of aren't really in it for a majority of the third act. And then I thought, great decision. And then, you know, in a Disney fashion, similar to what happened in Frozen 2, they kind of revert that as kind of a cop-out. And I'll admit, while I understand, because Disney and it's a brand new movie and franchise, I was not a personal fan. I'm assuming by your expression, you do not remember what I'm talking about.
This is the expression of a man reading the Wikipedia summary real quick.
Well, while you're doing that, I will also just say James Newton Howard's score, great in this film.
Oh my gosh, the music was amazing.
Really underrated. Also, this isn't a usual Disney musical. It's not a musical, and I don't think it needed to be a musical.
Oh yeah, it did not need to be a musical. I love it as it was in terms of the score. Like, so much, like we talked about how the action just rose super quick, got right into the story. The music totally set up with that. You're energized the whole time, unless you're me, passed out for the last 20 minutes of the movie.
So reading the Wikipedia page, what do you then take of the ending of the film?
So I just read the summary, and I think, this is my lawyer brain, if I was working for Disney, instead of sending cease and desist orders to middle schools making murals, I would argue that this was a good decision in terms of really keeping that cycle going of persevering trust in order to finally do what needs to be done.
Okay, you and your weird cryptic lawyer talk. I'll take it, whether it's actually relevant to my point or not.
So, okay, but your point was more about, like, you just didn't like it for theatrical effect? What was your issue with it?
No, my issue was, like, so the importance that, like, Sisu's really saying trust people, and then given what happens with the end, it would be so great if Raya learn trust, and then the ending happens. And then given with certain characters, whether they're in the third act or not, it's a Disney film, so it should have a happy ending, and I understand. But I think to, like, hone on that point of, like, last words, that would have been more impactful. But I understand. It's Disney.
I don't know why, but my first thought with last words, another non-Disney reference, the first Ice Age, when the woman, like, drowns in the river with the baby.
You mean no, like, last words.
Say words. Yeah, no words. But no, I think it was good for it. You have that cycle going back from how the whole adventure kind of got started. And this is, like, the beginning of the last phase of the mini adventure, like, leading to the end of the movie.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, but we're also...
are you following?
Yes, but I do understand how we may sound a bit cryptic, since we do not want to spoil...
Yeah.
Or try not to spoil the ending of this movie. So let's move on. Cam, as I mentioned before, this is currently in theaters right now, as well as Disney Plus, for $30, in which you rent it, and you and your family, or whoever you're with, can rewatch it for as long as possible, as long you have a Disney Plus account, and as long it is on the service.
And you have $30 that you're not spending on food or rent or electricity or anything like that.
I saw this in theaters yesterday at the first showing. There was maybe 10, 12 other people in the theaters. By the way that you put it together, it sounded like you watched this at home.
I did. I was sprawled out on my couch in my underwear, and it was beautiful.
So because of that, would you have said that you were fine watching this at home, or should this be seen in theaters?
I mean, I'm very biased. I love the movie theater experience. I would see it in theaters, but I was also fine watching it at home. I don't think watching it at home you miss anything, except maybe, like, sound, but everyone has, like, good speakers these days, or TVs are wild what they have for sound. I don't think much is missed by watching it at home.
So, as I said, I watched this in theaters, and I think part of the element of that, it is an animated film, and Disney has come such a far way through animation, and that animation, everything is physically made by human touch, that the animation, the details seen on a 200-300+ foot screen really looks great, and as we hinted, James Newton Howard's score, I was blown away at how great and inspirational it was. I loved it so much that personally, I really have to say that I loved seeing this in theaters. I would have been a bit more disappointed if I watched this at home, being distracted by lights and my phone and food and whatnot.
I'll compromise with you. It's worth seeing in theaters if it's an IMAX or a 4D theater.
I just saw it normally.
But
I will say that in theaters, there's currently a short film with it. It is a silent, musical-based short that I actually thought was beautiful. I will admit, I teared up a lot at it, and is only in theaters and will be on Disney Plus in June. So if you want to see this 5-star short film, it is only in theaters.
So you're telling me I paid $30 to watch this movie, and I didn't even get the short.
You did not get the short. Guess who got the short? This guy.
The short guy?
The short guy got the short. But to move on, next, Cam, Who or what would you say was the star of the film? Was it your girl Awkwafina? Was it the Disney formula? Was it the animation? Was it the score? The one thing you can take away saying, this was great no matter what.
You know what? I guess it'd have to go... I don't know if it's just because I saw the segment on The Daily Show going into it and I was thinking about it more. But the way that they like adapted like authentic Southeast Asian cultural things, like stuff that resonated. Like, I don't even want to spoil it. There's a lot of cultural influence from Southeast Asia that are different from like Chinese influences in Mulan, Japanese influences in any other movie that's like meant to take on Japanese culture. You see that uniqueness, and I think Disney did a great job kind of like setting those into a Disney world while also like hearkening to something that's authentic in the real world. That was my big takeaway, but I think I was like primed to take that away. Take that out of the equation, I'd say a two-way tie between Awkwafina and the animation in general.
I definitely agree. Great point on the just unique Asian representation in this film and how it doesn't feel phoned in to this film. It just feels very authentic and unique and different. For me, this one's tough because I do love a lot of elements of this film. I would personally say the animation. Disney, over the course growing up, has really stepped up their game. And not only are the designs great of just the characters, which I think this may be one of their better character designs of just looking animated as well as realistic, but the backgrounds, the sets, the colors, and the unique different lands that they go to, as well as lighting. There's a lot of great lighting effects in the fight scenes, which I just think are beautiful. So for me, I'm going the animation with an honorary mention to James Newton Howard's score. I think that was great as well.
Yeah. Do you know if the score is out on Spotify yet? I need to get on that.
It should be on Spotify.
I hope it is.
And Cam, the final question, what would you give this on the nut ranking? Would you give this almond, no reaction, lowest of the low? Would you give this a walnut, a cashew, which is mixed to positive, or the peanut, the almighty peanut, best of the best? What does this get on your list?
I'd give it a pecan.
That is not an option.
Why is that not an option?
Because... what's a pecan? I don't know what it does to me. These are the four options.
A pecan or a pecan. It's my favorite nut.
All right. No. You have to choose one of the four.
I don't like your rules.
This is what you get when you get on the show.
Not even a macadamia, Josh. Nope. Never tried a macadamia nut.
I actually may not be allergic to that, but I don't want to try.
See, Josh, you need to trust these things. That's the whole point of the movie.
Don't you dare do that to me. So, Cam, what would you give this? Almond, walnut, cashew, or the almighty peanut?
Almond, walnut, cashew, peanut. I hate cashews, especially considering that this is like a Southeast Asia-focused film. In Vietnam, they use political prison labor to shell cashews, and the acid from the shells melts their fingers. And it's a whole human rights issue that I've convinced so many people to stop eating cashews for.
All right, lawyer. But
despite my hatred of cashews, I think cashew is a solid place where this movie ranks.
You know what? I am also going for cashew. I think that everything that has made previous Disney films really works in this one. I think that has great animation, great music, great score. The characters are fun. The comedy's pretty good. Great, unique, original story. I just think that some of the one pacing kind of gets lost with going to one place, getting this item, going to another place, getting the item, and some decisions in the third act, not the finest in my opinion, and there's way too much exposition. I kept on getting lost in what was important for the story, but still, very solid film from Disney.
Could have been a peanut if they made it a musical. It doesn't have to be a musical.
I don't know.
Not peanut. Wait, no, peanut's the top one. You know what? No, I think you're right. I don't think they could have come up with songs and musical acts good enough to really like match everything else and make it a musical.
Yeah, because it's more of a fantasy action-based story. You don't need music. So Cam, that is our review of Raya and the Last Dragon. As we said, it is currently in theaters as well as Disney Plus for a $30 charge in which you can watch it unlimited.
Too much.
If you're a family,
the rent is too damn high.
If you're a family of five, it is a perfect charge. But beyond that, Cam, because this is a Disney animated film, I thought this is the perfect time to do a list for the top 10 Disney animated films of all time. This goes back to the first film, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. They have had over 50 films. I think they're at 58. 59, maybe?
I have a terrible feeling that you're going to start listing movies that I haven't watched yet. I'm going to feel so embarrassed.
No, I wouldn't do that. But pretty much, as we said, so everyone gets confused of Disney and Pixar. No Pixar films on this list. No a goofy movie. No an extremely goofy movie. Because that is an offshoot studio of Disney. These are the straight Disney animated films. Cam, how was this getting your list together of the top 10? Did you have any rules for yourself? Did you want to focus on certain things? What do you look for in a Disney film?
So I did that thing that you're not supposed to do when ranking movies and just left it to nostalgia.
Oh, no. No, I'll admit I did it kind of as well.
Like, nostalgia was the first, like, entry point where I looked at the movie like, oh, I love that one. That made me feel so good watching it as a kid. And then I started thinking about the different factors of it and compared it with the other ones. Like, I guess you could think of nostalgia as, like, the first filter.
Yeah, I have that. For me, it was hard because all of Disney's, like, top films, they're all great. There's really not that many issues I have with these films, but there's also a mix of Disney gets highly praised for two films specifically, Frozen and Lion King, and yes, they're great. And sometimes when a film gets too highly praised, it does become a retractor sometimes in my mind. So I've been trying to balance the social aspect of just how much love it gets in my personal, in a way, vendetta against it, or me wanting to show love for an underrated movie, as well as there's a good period in the 90s where Disney had hit after hit after hit. I don't know if I want to clump all of those together in this list. So I try to spread out old, 90s, modern. Do you have a preference of a Disney version? Which era of Disney do you like?
I honestly don't have a preference. If it's a good movie that I enjoyed, depending on whenever it came out. I know, right?
Deep to the core.
I like to take things for the time that they were written in. Or not just written, but entirely produced.
One more question before we start. Cam, the evolution of Disney animated films. As many people are aware, they did do 2D animated hand-drawn films, and then they moved on to 3D CGI. Not to go into full analysis of it, but do you have a preference?
I gotta say the hand-drawn is my preference.
I do like the hand-drawn.
I say big classical economists in terms of let people who specialize specialize. Let Pixar do the 3D stuff. Disney was doing great. Why they gotta mess it all up? And I'm sure... Actually, you know what? We said it's not going to be on our list. We won't talk about Chicken Little, but that's one of my major issues with Chicken Little.
It is time. Cam, what is your number 10 Disney animated film?
Number 10? I'm going to go with Brother Bear.
Interesting. Joaquin Phoenix turns into a bear in Alaska. What's not to love?
When that movie came out, it was very into like, very into animals, like biology, that kind of thing. So it was cool seeing all the animals in that. I thought the animation style wasn't terribly offensive as Chicken Little was. I like the music, and I like that there wasn't too much music. I like the idea of redemption, too, that kind of comes from the story. That, like, there's a way to fix things, and it can be done. It'll be tough, but you work through it. You'll get to it.
So I was 5 when this film came out, and I don't know. I never grew close to it. And then I actually didn't rewatch it until freshman year of college, and it was on Netflix, and I thought, it's fine. Visually, like all of Disney films, except for Chicken Little, the animation is great. I love just the unique setting of Alaska and also the concept of Joaquin Phoenix turns into a bear. The brother relationship is really cool. You liked it. I did not. I did not like the music. Phil Collins.
You didn't like the music?
There is one song that I thought was hilarious when I think Joaquin Phoenix tells the truth, and the lyrics of the song are very obvious. And I thought, what is this Tarzan ripoff?
I need to look this. I'm trying to remember what the song was. Because, like, whenever I think of the music, the first thing I always come is, like, tell everybody I'm on my
way. Oh, I do love
that
one.
With new friends and new places to see. It's a very cute song.
All right, up for me at number 10. This might be a little low for your list, but me, it's The Little Mermaid. The classic 1989, you got Ariel, the redheaded mermaid, who's portrayed by Jodie Benson. Love her singing voice. And as the animal sidekick, you got Flounder. You got Prince Eric. There's so much iconic imagery, whether it is her red hair or her on the rock singing Part of Your World. I mean, the songs are great. Under the Sea, Kiss the Girl. It's really some of the best. And Ursula, great villain. I really like this film. I will admit, the message... It's not the best of, you know, girls, just use your looks and you'll get anything you want.
But this is back when Disney was about entertainment more so than teach us something big.
That is true. And some of the characters, like Prince Eric, they are a bit thin, but I could get over it. This was released and had many re-releases to gross $111.5 million domestically and $222.2 million worldwide. So my number 10, The Little Mermaid.
Do you really factor money into your... list, Josh?
I always do. No.
Is it all about the money?
It's not about the money, but I love box office numbers. So, Cam, that is why I always include how much a movie makes.
Okay. I definitely should have done more research then.
You don't have to do that. It's been known on the show that it's just a me thing.
Okay. Number 9. Mulan.
Mulan.
Yeah. What can we say about Mulan?
Well, what can I say? Because this is a famous in our relationship that I've just not seen the original Mulan. And I like to stand by that because if I want to always watch another Disney movie, I will always have Mulan for another good one. But I like that, you know, I haven't seen it all.
There's a movie that I'm sure is pretty high up on your list that I have not seen, that I don't know if I've told you I haven't seen it yet. But you're going to be so disappointed when I tell you I haven't seen it. So I'll wait for that.
I'm scared. But what do you love about Mulan?
I like the girl power part of the story. I like this idea of sacrifice for loved ones, too. I liked Eddie Murphy as the dragon. I thought, like we talked about earlier with Raya, there's that good striking balance between like being too over the top out of the loop with the sidekick comedy stuff. I thought that Mulan had a decent balance with that too. I like there are two sidekicks, the cricket and the dragon, that kind of like evened each other out. I thought it was great as a musical too. I guess part of the reason that Raya didn't have to be a musical, but I thought it would have been great if it was. I guess it might just be harkening back to that Mulan thing too.
Well, yeah. As I said, I would not know because I've not seen the original. What I can say is that I've seen the remake, and I'm not a fan of the remake.
I haven't seen the remake because I don't want to see the remake.
Good, and you shouldn't. You will probably be disappointed. But next up for me at number 9. At number 9, I have Tangled. Personally for me, I think this is the best 2010s princess movie.
Really?
You got Mandy Moore as Rapunzel. You got Zach Levi as Flynn Rider. Great villain with Mother Gospel. The songs, they're not as iconic, but on their own, they're still pretty damn good. I like the romance element that felt very organic and not forced with Rapunzel and Flynn Rider. The sidekick animals, I'll admit, they can be a bit Disney-fied, but I think they're also fun with the chameleon and the horse, the police horse. I think it's funny, and as a CG anime film, the visuals are really top-notch. I personally think that Tangled is the perfect balance of all of the elements in a Disney princess film, at least in the 2010s. Pretty big financially, $200 million domestically, $585 million worldwide. My number 9, Tangled.
I haven't seen the entire movie.
You haven't seen the entirety of Tangled?
I have not seen the entirety of Tangled. I didn't like... It didn't really click with me. Like, I didn't like the Frozen 2 Tangled, like, the Northern European princesses, if you will.
Oh, okay. But I will say that I love a good Disney villain. As I said, Mother Gospel, I think, is a great villain. But I love the dark ending. The ending of this film is a bit dark, and I love that.
Oh, she's a great villain.
Anyway, next up, number 8. What do you have?
Zootopia.
I love Zootopia.
I love it, too. But I thought that, like, while it was good to have a movie that addresses, like, racism and things like that, they were way too on the nose with some things. Like, sometimes it felt like too much.
I mean, I really enjoy Zootopia, and I'm going to be talking about it later, so I don't want to give away too much.
That's all good. Can you tell me what it box office, though?
I'm going to talk about it later.
Tell me now.
No, you'll get it later. You'll get it as a surprise.
Okay, Josh.
Up for me at number 8, this might be a low also for your list, but is The Lion King. This film is iconic. It is deemed as the best. It's just funny that it's a Shakespearean inspiration of Hamlet. I just think very weird, but it works very well. Elton John's song, Circle of Life, Can't Wait to Be King, Hakuna Matata, Can You Feel the Love Tonight? They're great. Of course, spoilers, but Mufasa's death, very emotional. I love the animation. Of course, it's very colorful, and also just a cool use of Africa. Timon and Pumbaa are a bit borderline for annoying comedic relief, but they're just good enough for me. The one big detractor, Matthew Broderick. I hate Matthew Broderick as adult Simba. I hate him in general, but it is horrible that now 25 plus years later, we are stuck with Matthew Broderick in The Lion King. So
why do you hate Matthew Broderick?
He sounds emotionless, and he sounds like he always has a cold, and he sounds like he doesn't care about anything he's in. This grossed $421 million domestically and $986 million worldwide over a couple re-releases, one including a very successful 3D re-release in 2011.
Was it very successful? I thought it was a disappointment.
No, this was the only successful one, and then the rest became disappointment. But this was one of the Disney animated films that did become a live-action remake, which I also hated, as well as Mulan.
I also hated I didn't pay to watch it. I saw it on a plane, and I was disappointed.
What about The Lion King? What do you think?
That's actually my number 7.
Oh, perfect. Perfect transition. Yeah.
So yeah, same thing. I thought it was enjoyable how they adapted Hamlet into just, what if we take this Shakespeare story and make it animals and move it over here? And it works out perfectly. You have this idea of how lions work in a pride. And the movie is just great with music. It's iconic music that literally I could play it in a group of people my age, younger, older, and everyone will just start singing. I think it's one of those Disney movies that really brings everyone together.
It really does. But also one of the reasons why I feel like it might be a bit lower on my list is because of how much love it gets. Do you ever feel that?
I'm a total contrarian. I'm always like, contrarian, that's it. Whenever I see things getting too much affection, I'm like, but what about the time it did this thing?
Exactly. All right, up for me at number 7. I'm going old school on this one.
Ooh.
And I got Pinocchio.
Oh, okay.
This is one of the old Disney films. This is the one I love when Disney had balls. This is, first off, the iconic story of Pinocchio, and you got classic characters of Pinocchio, Jiminy Cricket, Geppetto, Blue Fairy, the Whale, my favorite character of them all. It brings us the classic Disney song, When You Wish Upon a Star, and one thing to remember about this film that has always stuck with me is the horrifying imagery, whether it is him in the puppet show, him locked up, him turning into a donkey with all of his friends, or him getting eaten by the whale, or the whale chase. I mean, horrifying imagery, which also makes me excited for every single interpretation of Pinocchio. I think is a classic story that, because of all these different directors, I'm always excited to see how this scene is going to be done. I will say, it has been a while since I've watched it, but Disney is doing a remake of it with Robert Zemeckis directing it, and you got Tom Hanks as Geppetto, Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Jiminy Cricket, and Cynthia Erivo as the Blue Fairy. I'm excited for that. I hope it's good. But also, non-related to Disney, Guillermo del Toro is doing a stop-motion animated version of Pinocchio as well, which is going to be coming out soon. Two Pinocchios I'm hyped about.
What's the medium? Sorry, for the Guillermo del Toro, what's the medium? Is he doing like an actual marionette, or are they doing like Legos?
I don't know. I think it's clay. It's clay stop-motion animation. But over multiple re-releases, Pinocchio has grossed $84.3 million domestically. We do not have international numbers. But that is my number 7, Pinocchio.
Okay, so let's talk about Pinocchio. I think the thing I love the most about Pinocchio is that it ages like milk. Every year there's something new wrong with it that people find out, and they're like, oh no, this movie was terrible. Be it...
What are you talking about?
Dude, Pinocchio was a sex doll for Geppetto.
No, don't do that. Don't ruin this. It is a classic family story.
I hate to ruin it for you, but that subject came up in my criminal law class. What?
This is why people should not go to college. You know, I'm not asking how they came up in your criminal law class. I don't want to open up that door.
We're talking about thought crimes.
Anything else about Pinocchio before we move on?
No, but about thought crimes.
Nope.
We
are moving
on. Anytime you jaywalk, it's a thought crime because you're a thought.
Ah, thanks. Anyway, what's up for you at number 6?
Number 6, we got... This is a movie that I haven't seen the whole thing in years, but I'll have like little random memories of either songs or scenes from it. Animated Robin Hood.
I've not seen this one.
Really?
Yeah, I never thought it was big enough for, like, I have to see this. I think I have it on VHS, but tell me more about Animated Robin Hood.
So, it holds a very special place in my heart because me and my dad used to watch it all the time. And he would always, just, like, start singing the songs and stuff. We'd both join in. And I don't know if you're familiar with it to the point that you know that, like, the exclamation of joy in that world was, Oodalolly. I'll send you all the videos later of songs you need to know from it. It was a rooster that would just like strum a little guitar, kind of like how bards did like back in medieval England, like the traveling troubadours and whatever. But it was meant to be more like a folksy kind of Appalachian stuff. So like Robin Hood and Little John running through the forest, like, and he kind of like narrated everything going through the stories to keep track of everything. What was weird about Robin Hood though is how human-like the foxes looked.
Well, that kind of goes into what I do know about Robin Hood, is that modern-day people on Twitter, there's a good portion that think he is hot. And that concerns me, because he's a fox.
Yeah, it's a furry prototype. Like, 1973 is just, let's make this happen.
That's disturbing.
It really is. So that's why I'm kind of keeping it at the middle. Like, yeah, a lot of nostalgia, a lot of fun times. I thought the music was great. Animation was kind of meh, because it was older, like a little grainy. I love the voice actor work in it, though. I couldn't tell you who was in it, but I love the way that they did it.
Well, Robin Hood was released in what I think of as a weird dark period for Disney. I think it was right after Disney's death. And it was just nothing great, at least in my opinion, notably came out of that. So I just never had the iconic isms to watch Robin Hood. So you suggest I should watch it?
I think you should, but with a grain of salt. Don't watch it because it's great. Watch it because it's fun.
Watch it because they will be a human-like fox.
Watch it because you're going to find yourself having creepy thoughts about foxes. But, like, to contrast it with what we said about Lion King earlier, it's let's take this old story, make it animals, and move it over here. Robin Hood is just like, let's take this old story and make it animals. So it missed that element of it. Also, they're, like, very anthropomorphic, as opposed to Lion King, where they're, like, actual animals.
Up for me at number 6, this also might be too low for your list, but it is Beauty and the Beast. This is deemed one of the best. It is the classic romance story, and you got a wonderful set of characters. Belle, the Beast, Lumiere, Cogsworth, Mrs. Potts, Chip, and, I mean, the songs, they're great. Belle, Be Our Guest, Beauty and the Beast. I love the songs. Gaston, great villain. The ballroom scene, iconic and just visually beautiful. And also, one thing to note of just earlier Disney films I feel like they've kind of gone away with is that it is short, but also leads to a very quick pace, which I like. It is a very quick movie, and I really enjoy that, and it was the first animated film to ever be nominated for Best Picture. And yes, there may be a bit too much love that may turn me off from it just a bit, but still, great classic movie, $206 million domestically, $438 million worldwide. That was over the course of multiple re-releases, including a 3D re-release. So my number 6, Beauty and the Beast.
I completely agree with you on one of the beauties of that movie.
Nice pun, Kale.
thanks, high five. One of the beauties of that movie being just how short and straight to the point it was. As much as I love film, art, things like that, I don't like when it's drawn out too long. Beauty and the Beast, they get right to it. The music starts off nice, high energy, like, oh, this is a weird girl, but we're going to sing very nice about it.
And she's so weird just because she likes to read.
Yeah.
How dare she read?
How dare she? No, just kind of everything kind of coming in at the same point. You get the story, you get that her dad's like a weird inventor dude, and you see everything kind of going through. It felt like very good A to B stuff, as opposed to like A to B stuff with nothing happening along the way. Music was great. I thought the animation was surprisingly, like, I thought the details were better than people give it credit for or really even talk about. Like, the scene that comes to mind is when the Beast is fighting off the wolves. Like, the detail that goes into not just the actual fights and how they do that, but like the injuries that he sustains from it too. I thought that was kind of cool.
I love it. What about the remake though? Because I've said I've hated the two previous remakes. What do you think of the remake on this one?
We're talking the live action remake?
Yeah, the live action one.
Okay. So there are two Disney live action remakes that I enjoy. Beauty and the Beast is one of them.
Interesting.
I'll talk about the other one. You might have heard it. I'll talk about the other one later when I get higher up my list.
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast, I think, thinking back on the movie, I hate it a lot more. But if I watch it, I would say, like, this is fine. This is enjoyable. But there's something just, like, now almost 4 years later, I just think negatively back on.
Really?
The live-action remake. I don't know why.
Is it Emma Watson?
It also might just be Emma Watson's voice and the visuals. Because the sets look nice. The animation, at least on the Beast, really is not the best in my opinion.
It was a little dark across the whole time, too, in terms of lighting. Like, I think they could have done better with that.
Well, it's supposed to be, you know, natural and realistic.
But I also want to see what's happening. We could get into a whole discussion about that episode of Game of Thrones later, too.
Never saw Game of Thrones, so we're moving on. So, Cam, we are now at the halfway point of our list, which means it is the perfect time now to be taking a quick break. So we're going to be taking a quick break to hear a word from our sponsor, Anchor, and then we'll get right back to the list. Welcome back from the break, everybody. I'm joined by special guest Cam Kushner. We just talked about Raya and the Last Dragon in theaters as well as Disney Plus for a $30 charge, and we are currently in the middle of our top 10 Disney animated films. We are at number 5. Cam, what do you have?
Well, now that I'm thinking about it, I've got a question.
Uh-oh.
Regarding Raya's box office, how is the $30 premium charge going to work into the calculations for that?
All right, so I was going to re-edit a portion into earlier in the episode, but I can do it now. So, the box office, we're recording this the second day of release. So the only information we have right now is that Raya has grossed $2.5 million domestically, which overall, compared to Disney, really bad. In COVID times, it's about standard, but to note, last week, Tom and Jerry grossed $14 million domestically opening weekends, $4 million opening day. One, that film did not get as much great reviews as Raya and the Last Dragon. As well, it is on HBO Max for free. So that means that Raya and the Last Dragon, which has a streaming service charge, gross less, which has the Disney name on it, has great reviews. So it is weird that, yes, it is grossing less than the not great Tom and Jerry. Certain elements are potentially to blame for this. One, certain chains like Cinemark, which is a big theater chain, actually is not showing Ryan the Last Dragon because apparently Disney is asking for too much money. So they said, no, we're doing great with Tom and Jerry. We do not need Ryan the Last Dragon. And another element is that Tom and Jerry was the first family film in 3 months, and Raya's coming right after that. So families probably needed something immediately, and they already got that fill. So it's very weird that Ryan the Last Dragon, which is now estimated to gross an opening weekend of $9 million, would not gross as much as the for free on streaming Tom and Jerry. But to go into your point of the $30 charge, we will never know. Disney did not announce the Mulan $30 charge, how much it made from that. So we won't know on Disney Plus how much it makes, but we will know how much it makes in the box office, which I believe it will have long legs given limited competition and great reviews. So to go back to the list, Cam, what do you have now for number five?
Number five, we got Moana. Like we talked about earlier in comparing it with Raya, you've got cool story. It's also got the girl power element. You've got, what is it? I guess it's the, what do you call it? Polynesian Islands. It takes place there. Really cool application of cultural elements from that part of the world. You've got Maui, who's comedic but also relatable because, like, yes, he's a demigod, but he's human enough that it's not like Sisu, where it's like, oh, this is just a dragon hanging out with the main protagonist. Music was great, very enjoyable. Right after that movie came out, I was an assistant director at a summer camp, and the age group that I was in charge with, our mascot was the Islanders, and we'd literally just play Moana songs all the time. So it's got a special place in my heart for that, too. I thought the animation style was cool. I liked that everyone was, like, a little pudgier in that. I don't know why. I thought it was kind
of
funny.
Well, actually, it got some hate because of that back in the day, but...
Really?
No, to go into certain elements, I actually think Moana is the best visually animated Disney film, I believe.
Are you including that with Raya now, too?
I'm still including that with Raya. I think Moana with...
Because Raya is pretty satisfying for animation and visual stuff.
It is very satisfying, but I think that the island, the water scenes are absolutely beautiful. And of course, Lin-Manuel with the music, How Far I'll Go, You're Welcome, which I can rap a lot of. The thing about Moana, I will admit, it's not on my list. I think that the story is very weak.
Yeah.
But one, the girl power, the Moana as just actually the voice actress, which I talked about on my top 7 young heroine films, is a young voice actress, which I love. But I just think that the story, she needs this MacGuffin, and then there's this weird demon fire lady. And of course, with what the power of love and trust, it solves everything. But also going into the point of Maui, you like it? It might be The Rock that is turning me off from it, because The Rock's enjoyable. I just think that sometimes he can be a bit too much. And I think that him in the film, it doesn't work so well for me. And also there are certain elements like the coconuts. And while I like the song Shiny, I just think that the inclusion of that crab character is very weird. So story-wise, it's not the best, but really, really good top-notch film.
I agree with you overall with the crab character in Shiny. But I think when you look at it, just like sectioned off by itself, yeah, there's the underwater element you need to deal with. And also, I guess, I don't know, I'm thinking that it might have had something to do with their access to Flight of the Conchords, that they worked that in, as opposed to, like, I don't know, I like to think that there's, like, stories like that, like, oh, there's some kind of connection or something on the side that, like, for whatever reason, they had to work the Flight of the Conchords in there, and I think that was a great way to do it. I think it very matched up with their style.
All right, up for me at number 5, we got Wreck-It Ralph.
Really?
I think that this is a very clever premise of using real and fake video game characters, and I love the use of John C. Reilly and Sarah Silverman, in which John C. Reilly, he is technically like the Donkey Kong bad guy, and he doesn't want to be bad. He wants to be a good guy, and he tries to prove itself, and he makes his only friend relationship with Sarah Silverman, who's in this game Sugar Rush. First off, great comedy and just some puns in the land of Sugar Rush, and also going back to just how Disney can really kick it in with surprise messages. I love the message of this film, that sometimes you should just love you for yourself. You don't need to try to be anything else, because can you recite the message of the bad guys?
The first thing that came to mind when you said, can you recite the message of the bad guys, was a line from Elf: the best way to spread Christmas cheer, singing loud for all to hear.
No, that's not it. It is, I am bad and that's good. I'll never be good and that's not bad, because there's nobody I'd rather be than me. I think that is very heartwarming. And
from Antagonist AA.
Yes, and I love the relationship, as I said.
Antagonist Anonymous. Did they call it that?
I don't know. I have to look back.
They should have. They should have.
And also, there is a very fun twist villain in this film before twist villains were Disney's main thing in the 2010s, which I was not a big fan of, but I thought it was very fun in this film. I was surprised that you're not that big into Wreck-It Ralph.
I don't remember clicking with it very well. Like, I remember thinking it was a fine movie when I saw it. I thought it was fun that they incorporated, like, real video game characters into it, too. You know what I think it was? I think it was Wreck-It Ralph 2 might have just, like, made me averse to it. I didn't like Wreck-It Ralph 2 very much.
Oh, I think Wreck-It Ralph 2 is not as great overall, consistently, but once again, a great message at the end of the film of if you love something, you sometimes have to let it go. But just financially, $189 million domestically, $496 million worldwide. I will admit, on a rewatch, it was not as great as what I remembered when I saw it, but also when I first saw this film was during Hurricane Sandy and the theaters were the only thing open, and I was, what, 8th, 9th grade?
I think that, yeah, no, I remember that too.
I felt closer to it for some reason, so I love Wreck-It Ralph, so that's my number 5.
Because you didn't die in a hurricane?
Because I didn't die in a hurricane. What do you have next up for number 4?
I had another question about Moana that I forgot to ask you. We were talking about it. Look, you can cut this out in editing, it's fine.
What is it?
Do you remember the episode of Courage the Cowardly Dog with Ramsay?
I never watched Courage.
No!
You're too old for me!
Stop!
You're old!
Okay. So, number four for me is going to be Atlantis: The Lost Empire.
Interesting, okay.
Purely for animation and score. I like that it was more, not purely, that's a lie. I also like that it was kind of a more mature theme than you see in, like, think about it. I was like 6, 7 years old when that movie came out. All the Disney movies I'd seen up to that point were like Lion King, Aladdin, Little Mermaid. This seemed a lot more mature. This is a real guy dealing with real world problems. Like, he was an orphan who lived in the basement of a museum, trying to like prove his life's work, coming together with all these other misfits who have their own like history. It was really like my introduction to people having their own past and their own issues coming together to kind of resolve them while resolving a superordinate goal.
Wow, that's deep. I never thought Atlantis would do that much to one person.
It's deep, yeah. Also, scoring was amazing. Animation was fantastic. And I think, what's her name? The Atlantean girl.
All I know is Michael J. Fox is in it.
Michael J. Fox is in it. But the Atlantean girl, I think, was kind of like my awakening to like attraction to women. Like, oh, I find her attractive as a 7-year-old.
Not Atlantis.
That's the earliest, you know, no, that's a lie. I'll talk about my earliest female attraction later.
Oh.
But this was early on.
Okay. Well, to go to my perspective of Atlantis, I am aware I saw this as a kid. I don't think I've ever rewatched it. I cannot remember a single thing about this movie, but I know through various VHSs and DVDs, I remember the trailer, and it looks cool. I don't know why I never went back to rewatch it, though. I definitely would.
We should watch it together sometime.
For you, I will watch Atlantis. But next up for me at number 4, I'm afraid of which film you haven't watched. I hope it's not this one. Princess and the Frog.
Oh, no.
You've never seen Princess and the Frog? No.
Oh, no. I told
you. It is the best modern day princess, Disney princess.
Especially since I live in New Orleans now. I'm so ashamed that I haven't watched it.
So one thing I love about this film is that it's technically the revival of 2D animation. Cam, for someone who loves 2D animation, and you said you miss it, this was after 5 years, Disney went back to do 2D animation. I think it is beautiful. You got Tiana as the main character. Great character, very well developed and fleshed out, and one thing that we've noted with several other Disney films is the unique setting. This is a very unique setting of 1920s New Orleans that deals with voodoo, and also Tiana is the first Black Disney princess and plays very well into the story itself, but a fun set of characters, even if some of them are in a way Disney-fied. But the songs, I'll admit, they're not as classic as some of the other Disney songs, but on their own, Almost There, Down in New Orleans, Friends on the Other Side, great songs, and has one of the best Disney villains, and one of the best, spoilers, best Disney deaths. $104 million domestically, $271 million worldwide. Did not actually do well financially, which is why we have not seen, besides Winnie the Pooh, another 2D animated film from Disney.
Yeah, hearing you say all that is just making me more ashamed that I haven't seen it yet.
You should be really ashamed. All right, what do you have for number 3?
Number 3, I'm going to go with another big nostalgia pick, Jungle Book. Oh no, you don't like The Jungle Book?
Explain why you love The Jungle Book and then we'll talk about it.
Again, when I was younger, super into animals, so seeing all that there, I thought it was very fun music. King Louis' song is like pretty much constantly in my head. Like, I thought it was a fun, jazzy twist on everything with the music there. I liked the character contrast between Bagheera and Baloo, like, across the whole thing. Like, I mentioned I liked that in Mulan, too, when you had the dragon and the cricket. But really seeing that in Jungle Book, it's, like, literally, like, mom versus dad, like, cool parent versus strict parent. Like, but not in a cheesy Disney way. I thought it played out nicely. I think I also secretly kind of wanted to be Mowgli. Like, this idea of just, like, living in the jungle with a bunch of cool animals. So it's got a very positive place in my heart.
That's cute. I'm sorry to ruin this. I really do not like the Jungle Book. So certain points, I never really watched it as a kid, so I had no emotional attachment. The reason why I saw it was because 5 years ago when the live-action Jungle Book came out, which I love. I think is one of not just one of the best Disney remakes, one of the best Disney films in general. The original was on ABC Family Freeform, and I just thought none of it mattered. I remember one thing I noted, which then saw the remake that fixed it, was that every scene, whether it was Baloo originally or then the monkeys or Shere Khan, none of them had any connection or real relation to each other. So that was the point where then I thought, like, what was all of this? And then, of course, the ending, which I think the ending's fine. I kind of I know what happens in the end, but I just thought that it is a bunch of situations linked together with nothing, kind of like Dumbo, which is why I also don't like Dumbo, but that's a different story.
You know, I never thought about that part of just like the literally Baloo was a strange bear that Mowgli wandered into that decided not to eat Mowgli.
It's very nice, very good for Baloo.
Like the live action remake definitely kind of filled that in with the whole like the context of the Law of the Jungle and whatnot. Back to my summer camp stories, we used to have like they call them devotions, which is where you'd have like a fable or a story or an activity that's meant to like have a big lesson over everything. And I would always do this one with my younger kids that was, you teach them the Law of the Jungle poem, ask them what they think it means, and then tell them what it's supposed to mean. And then you all go out and howl at the moon for a minute.
That's adorable. All right, up for me at number 3. This might be on your list. I love this film, and it is Lilo and Stitch.
That's my number 2.
This is, I think, one of really the if not the strangest Disney films, things I love. One, it takes place in modern day. It takes place in Hawaii. It has aliens as well. It is just a straight up comedy. But one thing I love about it is that the film is really depressing.
Yeah, I rewatched it last weekend, and just like all the things that you notice when you rewatch it.
Because I remember, so stuff I love about the film is that Stitch really, he is made in a lab, he's an experiment, and when he finds Lilo and he's kind of just finding his family, he realizes he's alone, and in a way this ugly duckling that he reads in a book. And there's a part in the movie where Lilo says, "I hear you cry every night." And I went, what? But I love that. And then also the relationship between Lilo and Nani, her sister, in which as a kid, I didn't really realize, but she is a teenage or early 20s year old older sister. Their parents have died. And if she doesn't take better care of Lilo, Lilo's going to be taken away from her by child services. And just on a rewatch, I thought how depressing that is and how much her sister, Lilo's sister, really just tries to be the best in a way mom. But beyond that, just beautifully animated. It uses water paint, watercolors, animation as backgrounds, which a lot of the Disney 2D animated films really did not do. And the music, Hawaiian Roller Coaster Ride. Love the Hawaiian music, especially that song. But Cam, did you know that there was a change or alteration in this film because of 9/11?
I'm guessing something about a spaceship crashing into something?
A little bit. So this movie came out summer of 2002, and if you remember, the climax of the film is them breaking into the spaceship to save Stitch, and then they fly through the mountains or canyons. They originally break into a 747 and then fly through the town, crashing into buildings. And, you know, they changed it for the better.
So was it not originally in Hawaii and they changed that because
it was always in Hawaii.
Gotcha.
But also, like a lot of these other Disney animated films, there's a remake coming. And I'll admit, I'm scared.
That is terrifying.
Don't touch it. Stitch live action will not look good. I'm calling it now. But financially, $145 million domestically, $245 million worldwide. Very successful. The last successful 2D animated film from Disney. So my number 3, Lilo and Stitch. Oh, and also the great story of Ohana. Another great family message.
So my number 2 is Lilo and Stitch. We talked about it in depth right now. But I think specifically, I rewatched it last weekend, and you just notice these little things that don't really make as much sense when you're watching it, like when I was like, what, 6 years old when it came out. For example, those scenes where Stitch, like, gets on the tricycle and they're, like, going to all these different parts of the island. It didn't click with me before. That's him realizing that he's trapped. And, like, the whole time he's, like, looking for ways to just get out of Lilo's clutches. Like, whenever he goes to play with the blender, when he's, like, doing stuff in the house, like, you think it's just kind of, like, mindless destruction. Like, oh, funny, the alien thing is playing with these gadgets. But no, there's a sense of desperation of, like, he needs to get the heck out of here. And then, did you know that Agent Bubbles was based on Marsalis from Pulp Fiction?
I did not, but that does make sense given the time period. Who right. is also portrayed by Ving Rhames. Great actor. But one thing I actually really liked about Lilo and Stitch is that the main cast, they're voice actors. They're no fame. There's, besides Ving Rhames, there's not really a famous person, and I like that. It feels just like a down-to-earth, in a way, realistic alien film.
It's like the Disney equivalent of a jam session.
Yeah, I really enjoy the film. I rewatched it for the first time in a while, freshman year of college, when, you know, being away from family, and it really hit home. Ohana means family, Cam. Say the rest with me.
Family means
no one gets
no
left.
No one is left behind. Or forgotten.
Well, then moving on to my number two.
You're not going to do a Stitch voice too?
Ohana means family.
That was horrible.
That was pretty bad.
Up for me at number two. I'm afraid this might be your number one, but I'd still be happy if it is. The Emperor's New Groove.
Oh, it's not my number one, but that is a great movie.
All right, perfect. I think this is the funniest Disney film. This really is, as well as Lilo and Stitch, a straight-up comedy. And just the set of characters. You got Kuzco, Yzma, Kronk. And I love it's a really cool just design of Inca culture. And also just going back to how the films are short. This film is like 77 minutes with credits. Or maybe without credits. Very quick. I love it. And I love the humor. A lot of meta humor, which is really good. A zany story of Kuzco turning into a llama. It's fun. The film has been memed a lot on the internet, which I also love. Really bizarre story that it went through development hell, years of development hell, and there is a unreleased documentary, it's released, an unofficial release documentary, The Sweatbox, depicting the making of the film. It's on YouTube.
Oh, that's the movie that it's about?
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta check that out.
89 million domestically, 169 million worldwide. I think it's the most underrated Disney film. My number two, The Emperor's New Groove.
I completely agree with you that it's the most underrated because I didn't even think about it when I was making my list.
I can't believe you forgot about this.
No, it's such a good movie, too. Music's fun in that. All the characters are just, like, enjoyable on their own. Emperor's New School was a decent series to follow that, too.
What about Kronk's New Groove, the DVD sequel?
Kronk's New Groove, it was fine. It was fun. But it wasn't like Emperor's New Groove. It didn't have that effect. Like, I think a thing that I really liked about Emperor's New Groove is there's, like, I feel like it's been a while since you have, like, a real blatant change of heart and character of a protagonist in a Disney film.
But I just think it's so different from all of Disney stuff that I think it's great.
I like Yzma as a villain. I think the way that they made her look kind of harkened like Ursula from Little Mermaid, like the purple skin, that kind of thing. I like that it was a comedic villain instead of a serious villain too.
All right, Cam, before we move on to our number one, what were just some Disney films that just didn't make your top 10 list?
Well, Emperor's New Groove because it's so underrated. Hunchback of Notre Dame. Music's good. Animation's weird. Characters are kind of strange. There's one song from it that, like, gets in my head every now and then. But, like, it's kind of disturbing. Just, like, the way that they turn, like, religious societal judgment into, like, the main driving antagonistic force.
That's Disney.
I wanted to find a place to put it because I'm so nostalgic about it. But I just couldn't do it with the others. Fox and the Hound.
I remember this one.
Yeah, it was so sweet. The Hound would make the sweetest little sound and, like, oh, and then they have to fight each other, and then, oh my gosh, it's so sad. Like, it breaks your heart. That movie gave me a lot of feels.
Any others?
You ready for this?
Yeah.
Meet the Robinsons.
I think it's fine. Not the best.
I like its quotability. I love the quotability of it.
I don't really think there's that much quotability in it.
Well, it's one quote that I can use all the time whenever I mess something up and I want to blame someone else for it.
I have a big head and small arms.
I just don't think this plan was very well thought out.
All right, well, for me, some films that just didn't make my list. We got Peter Pan as a kid from the original Disney films. That's one of the most fun films, in my opinion. Frozen and Moana. Those are really the only ones I'd really just didn't make
Josh,
my list.
I don't know if you knew this about me, but I used to work at a summer camp. And
What?
One time for movie night, we showed them Peter Pan. It was the first time I'd rewatched the whole movie since I was, like, 10 years old.
I don't think it's aged well.
It has not aged well. I'd say Pinocchio level age like milk.
No, because there's no what makes the red man red scene in Pinocchio.
No, but there's children running around smoking cigars, drinking beer.
It's not bad, though. It's part of the story of Pinocchio.
I'll have to rewatch Pinocchio, but I'm sure there's a what makes the red man red equivalent in Pinocchio.
Anyway, Cam, I think it is now time. What is your number one Disney movie? I'm afraid, because there's one film that if it's this, I'll be very upset.
I think you definitely know what it is, and I think you're going to be a little upset about it.
What is it?
So what's the deal with drum rolls on the show? Are you going to edit one in, or do I have to do it like...
If you want to do a drum roll...
I'm going
to
do a drum roll.
All right.
You ready?
Yeah.
Can you hear it?
Yeah, I can hear it.
Okay, good.
Do it.
We're waiting for you. Prince Ali, mighty. Yeah, Aladdin takes the cake so easily.
No, I was afraid it was going to be Hercules.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, thank God. Because there's some people at school that we were friends with that loved Hercules to death. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
I think that, you know what? I was about to judge for the factors that they decided that Hercules was their movie that they loved, but I think it's similar to what I loved in Aladdin, though.
All right, so what do you love about Aladdin?
Remember that thing I was talking about, my, like, sexual awakening?
I'm completely silent, but yeah, sure. Who was it?
Princess Jasmine. Just first time I saw, like, an ad for Aladdin, I'm like, oh my gosh, she's beautiful. And then, like, also, another thing that you might not have known about me, in addition to working at a summer camp, I'm Middle Eastern. I love the showcase of Middle Eastern culture. People give it shit because, like, they say it's inauthentic and kind of, like, orientalized. But I think it's a fine starting point. I like the influences in the music that it plays, too. Arabian Nights is, like, my jam sometimes. I thought the animation was really good, too. Like, I mentioned earlier that I liked Moana. They made people a little pudgy. I thought there were, like, some kind of weird curves where there should have been lines on things. But besides that, I thought it looked really good. But yes, Aladdin Takes the Cake is my number one. Just combination of nostalgia, personal attachments, animation, music. Characters are kind of, like, meh. Like, they... We appreciate how they dive right into things, like get through action and exposition fast. But I think Aladdin might have dived into it a little quick. I think the remake of Aladdin did better to kind of like establish how characters acted the way they did. Whereas the animated one just kind of jumped right into it.
How well do you think that the Robin Williams just jokes? How well do you think that they've aged for a modern audience?
Plenty well. I can't think of anything that hasn't aged well.
I don't know. I think, because I rewatched this.
Is there one that comes to mind for you?
It would just be whatever ones I'm like, what is that?
I mean, one could argue that any Robin Williams joke hasn't aged well, you know, because he's dead, but.
Oh my God. No, I mean, I like Aladdin. I think that it is. It's still one of their best. It should have been an honorable mention. I just think, at least out of the prime early 90s Disneys, for me, it is the least well put together, because in 2019, the remake came out, and then I thought, you know, I'm going to watch the original, and I forgot how slow the movie was until Robin Williams came in. He really is the heart and soul of this movie. I'm sorry, I think...
You thought it was slow? I didn't think it was that slow.
I thought the first 25 minutes before the genie really was... a bit tough to get through, but the music, great. I love Abu. I love Magic Carpet. Jasmine is a great character. It's a fun movie. Jafar, one of the best Disney villains.
Oh yeah. No, I think Jafar was a perfect combination of comedic villain with serious villain too.
I will say, Gilbert Gottfried as Iago, not my cup of tea.
Really?
I mean,
I think that was fun. Who would you have picked to do Iago in
1992?
In 92, who would you have picked?
Bill Cosby. That would age phenomenally.
Oh my.
But I will ask, what do you think of the remake?
I enjoyed it. I thought that, like I said, enjoying like the Middle Eastern influences of the movie, they really doubled down on those in the remake. You saw the scenes like when they walked through the streets. There were people like speaking Arabic, Persian, heard some Hebrew too, like things like that. Like it really took on this realistic element of a Middle Eastern port city, like a big marketplace. Like, I thought it was much more authentic on that. I liked Will Smith as the genie. I don't think it was bad.
The remake of Aladdin was getting a lot of hate before it came out because of the visuals, which...
Really?
I never thought looked bad, and the movie itself...
What was wrong with the visuals? I thought they were fine.
If you go back to, I think it's the January TV spot where we first see the genie, where he's walking, it's in the scene where we first get introduced to him, and people are like, oh my God, he looks horrible, and I'm like, what are you... It doesn't look completely great, but it doesn't look bad. A lot of people were giving it bad stuff, but you know what? I'll admit, it is fun. Will Smith as the genie, some nightmare fuel, I will admit, but I think that one, the jokes aren't as referential, which personally I like, which will mean that they will age better. The songs for Friend Like Me, including the DJ Khaled version, Prince Ali, I think Will Smith really brings it up. The visuals are nice. Nassim Pedrad as the...
I was just about to say, they brought back one of my favorite SNL characters ever. Or I guess SNL actress. Like,
she's fun and gives Will Smith something to do. It feels just like a fun, very colorful summer Disney movie. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Too much hate in my opinion.
No, my sexual attraction to Jasmine was maintained through the remake too.
Oh, that escalated in the remake, but I will say Jafar in the remake sucks. I do not like the Jafar. Or really Aladdin. He cannot sing, which is sad.
Oh, I kind of liked him. I like that he had more background in the remake, but...
Anyway, up for me at my number one. We got a film...
Wait, we got to drum roll it.
I don't drum roll.
I'll drum roll for you.
Fine.
Just tell me when.
Drum roll for me. It is... Zootopia. You mentioned it already. I think that a lot of these Disney films... In a way, I hate saying this, but they feel like kids' films. This does not feel like a kids' movie. This is an adult movie that is animated and is using the animation medium to show off this message that you were talking about before of just racial stereotypes or prejudice in a community to help and show kids what we should learn, the dangers of it. But other things about this film, I love the smart world building. You could tell that there is a fully fleshed out world, whether it makes sense or not, of how Zootopia, there's so many different regions for these types of animals. It's really cool, fun humor for both adults and kids. And once again, I think this is just a shockingly mature film for Disney that is just a really smart story and script. You've got Jennifer Goodwin and Jason Bateman as Judy Hopps and Nick Fox. I forget the fox's last name. And also, it was recently announced that there's going to be a Disney Plus show about Zootopia that is only focusing on different regions of the world of Zootopia, which if you're not getting a sequel, I think that's the perfect way to still be in this world. Gangbusters, financially. $341 million domestically, $1.005 billion worldwide. My number one, Zootopia. But yeah, you already talked about Zootopia. Any last remarks?
I think Shakira should have been a jaguar and not a gazelle.
I mean, Shakira in the film, it's just weird that she's in it, but also a welcome inclusion.
Shakira's a moneymaker. She's always welcome. But yeah, no, it was a good movie. It wasn't low on my list because I didn't like it. Like you said earlier, it made it out of like 50 and stuff like that.
That's true.
Love Aladdin.
So for you, there's no Snow White, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Frozen? No Frozen?
Frozen, I liked the one song, and I thought it was cool that they released Let It Go in like 20-something different languages. But I never really just had that connection to it. And like I said, nostalgia was one of my like main, the first filter.
What about, there's one movie that I have wanted to rewatch, Treasure Planet. Another film where I remember the Monsters, Inc. DVD with the crazy trailer for Treasure Planet. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's the star of it. Love JGL. I need to rewatch it.
It was vying for the same spot as Atlantis, and I didn't feel like I could put both Atlantis and Treasure Planet on my list because, like, it would have been very similar reasons that they got there. But I'm a big fan of Treasure Planet, too, just in terms of animation, score, everything going on. Weird Star Wars-ish kind of space world.
Which also, going back to the taking one property and moving it over here, it's Treasure Island. In space form.
Yeah. So like they took from over here, I guess, and moved it up there.
Exactly. Well, Cam, we went through the entire, I looked it up, 59 films of Disney. We have now our top 10 audiences. If you have not watched any of the Disney films, we got a great list, a great set of Disney films for you to watch, which they're all on Disney Plus.
I didn't realize you were such a corporate sellout with all your plugs today.
I'm sorry. I just want to make sure my audiences are informed, as well as being informed that as of now, this upcoming November 2021, Disney Animated Studios will be releasing their 60th film, Encanto, which is a musical fantasy film with music from Lin-Manuel Miranda.
You're telling me it's a musical fantasy film with music?
Yes. That takes place in Colombia.
Like Colombia or like Colombia?
Colombia. The mountains of Colombia. In a magical house in a vibrant town in a wondrous charmed place called an Encanto.
Oh, is it an El Dorado story? Are they remaking, what is it, Road to El Dorado?
Well, that's a DreamWorks movie, and I wouldn't know because I've never seen that one.
Oh, it's okay. I haven't seen it either. I just know references.
But anyway, Cam, thank you so much for joining me on this episode today. I hope you had a blast.
Josh, this was like Jimmy Neutron style, got a blast. Thank you for incorporating me. Thank you for making this happen. I really appreciate you committing the time and patience for me getting my less developed ideas about movies out there, but allowing me to express myself.
Of course. Do you have any last words? Anyone you want to make a shout out to? Anything you want to plug?
Let's see. I plugged my brother's podcast earlier, Wasting All This Time. Great listen at different aspects of shows that we, as the end of millennials, beginning of Gen Z, kind of grew up with a special segment dedicated to fan fictions they found on each thing. It's a good show. I'm not a sellout yet, so nothing really to plug. If you're considering law school, don't do it.
Ooh.
Oh, you know who we should shout out?
Who?
The man who brought us together, Alexander Zipper. Let's give him a little shout
Alexander out. Alexander Zipper, my big, your little. Love you, Zippy.
Love you, Zip.
If you made it this far, I'd be so impressed.
Same. Unless we just tell you to skip ahead.
That is true.
Yeah. All right, Josh, thanks again for having me. This has been a fantastic time.
Of course, and audiences, thank you so much for listening. And if you do not know, you can actually support the show, Mr. Movie, by going to anchor.fm/Joshua-Bergman/support. You can donate $10, $5, or just $1 a month. Anything would mean the absolute world to us. Cam, once again, thank you so much for joining me on this episode today. And audiences, thank you so much for listening, and we hope you tune in next time.